moment at least with Mr. Jarvis. Senator, this is a very general question despite what I said. Why do each of you think that you should personally be selected by the people of the state to represent them in the United States Senate?
Well, I believe that I have the capacity to render the highest service to the people of the state because I've demonstrated that now in 18 years of service and of achievement in such signal and landmark measures as the War Powers Resolution dealing with the commitment of the United States troops to war, preventing that unless the Congress concurs. That goes right to the issue of Vietnam and the war fought there under Lyndon Johnson's authority, the reform of pension plans of the United States, greatest in my judgment and the judgment of many, reform since Social Security in respect of workers' retirement, the work on unemployment and public service jobs, the safety and health of workers, national health insurance, and countless other things, education and health, the welfare, the foreign policy of our country, in which I've had great experience, my work in respect of peace in the Middle East, and so on. I think, therefore, that in terms of the experience, and then I have the standing in the Senate. People have kept me there for a period which is unusual in modern times for New York, and I have the kind of seniority, though I've always stood against the seniority system. We've got it, we should use it, which only Southern senators have had in the history of the Senate. And finally, I have ideas for the future. I have concepts, too, which I
will get
to a little later. Right.
Mrs. Keating.
Well, I feel that my candidacy offers an alternative to New Yorkers in this race because both gentlemen I'm running in opposition to are ultra-liberals in their outlook toward solutions for problems. Now, the vast number of New Yorkers in this state do not consider themselves liberal, and their lives bear out that fact. I believe that I'm articulating for middle America, for the silent majority, for the certainly the conservative mandate, which we saw come forth in 1970 and 1972. In recent elections, we've seen a groundswell of people coming back to basics, basic common sense government. We feel, and we're talking about integrity in government in all elections this year, people feel that the government's sort of gotten out of touch with them and are balking, particularly because of inflation. The main concern of New Yorkers and all people in the United States today and throughout the world is inflation. I am a widow living on a fixed income. I shop for my family daily in the supermarket. I'm tuned into the high cost of food, shoes, educating my children, figuring out how I'm going to make ends meet. What the government has done for and to the people of New York, I have felt as a resident of the state of New York. And I feel it's time that we have someone in the Senate who can speak for the people. Mr. Javits has mentioned in the past that we should have a housewife in the Senate. And I believe I would like
to be
a housewife. I feel we do need a woman.
I think he would still agree we should be a housewife, but I think he might have somebody else in mind. I mean.
Or someone else's seat, perhaps, in mind. No, but I do feel very honestly that I am able to articulate that we must reduce spending and size of the federal government in order to reduce inflation. We Americans are concerned.
We will get into the inflation problem in just a moment. Mr. Clark.
Well, I first think we really need change. We've had a nearly paralyzed Senate and Congress for a good many years now. It's the reason we have such a concentration of power in the executive. We've had people who've stood by all through Watergate, as I believe Senator Javits did, and never spoke out twice within the week before Richard Nixon finally resigned, saying he shouldn't resign. I think we need a new, aggressive, affirmative leadership that will face up to problems. We've got incredible problems. Look at the economic crisis that we've permitted to build. The Senate could have addressed that a long time ago. It's a little late now. We should have been working on it all these years. We've watched food prices and oil prices and gas prices go way beyond our control. We need some aggressive new leadership. I think my 8 years in the Department of Justice give me a unique set of qualifications. I really think the assurance of integrity in the political process has to be the highest priority now. After all the Watergate experience, we've done nothing. There's been no legislation. I've got 21 bills that I've recommended to Senator Ervin, to Chairman Rodino, and the House Judiciary Committee that can assure us that, to the highest extent that law ever can, that we'll not have a repetition. I mean, look what happened to the Department of Justice, the place that I served and loved. Senator Javits introduced John Mitchell to the Judiciary Committee back in 1969, saying what a splendid attorney general he'd be. But no one's done anything to prevent a repetition of the types of problems that we saw there, the political use of the House of Law and the corruption of its purpose in the rule of law. So I think the...
Why Ramsey Clark, though? You're talking about a change. Why a change to this man?
I think my experience in the Department of Justice is precisely what I was talking about, the 8 years there that tell me what will be necessary to prevent the political use of government to control it, to take from the conduct of senators the old way. Senator Javits practiced law for 13 of the 18 years he's been in the Senate, making $50,000 to $100,000 a year on the side. I think that's absolutely unacceptable. It's more than a full-time job. It's a total commitment. We need someone that will give it that, and that would be my purpose.
I have a strong feeling that Senator Javits has something to say.
Yes. I think I should claim my 1 minute now. In the first place, it's flatly false to say that I said nothing, that I said anything about Nixon not resigning. I said I didn't care whether Nixon resigned or not. I was for the House impeaching him and the Senate trying it. And that was my policy throughout from the time that Watergate first surfaced. And I was the first senator to join with Senator Hart of Michigan in seeking a special prosecutor in April of 1973. And at the end, when the showdown came, I was one of the seven senators, five of the leadership, with Goldwater and myself, who gave the bad news to Nixon that he would be removed, and whether he resigned or not was his business. But
you never had said, however, whether you were going to vote against him or for him, had you?
I did not say that I'd vote against him or for him, but we made it unmistakably clear to him that we thought he would be removed and that the votes were there to do it. And the reason I didn't say that I'd vote against him or for him is that I was to be a judge. And I'm a lawyer, and I do not believe that a judge calls a defendant up to the bench and tells him to plead guilty. And I made that very clear. I said that very thing. But I was very much heard on the issue. I was very strongly on the side of his producing the tapes and the papers without any regard to executive privilege, because I didn't think executive privilege applied. And I gave as the rule of law to my colleagues very openly and publicly that he didn't have to be guilty of an indictable crime to be removed. I had only to find him unfit to be president of the United States.
Mrs. Keating, do you have something to say?
Yes, I'd like to point out here what has typically taken place throughout this campaign. There are issues that concern New Yorkers' lives day to day.
I will get
to those.
The issues
are inflation and crime. Mr. Javits and Mr. Clark have used Watergate, campaign spending, how much who's spending and where it's come from, and also traveling abroad as 3 points during this campaign that I feel are irrelevant to what's taking place in the state of New York and what's affecting New Yorkers.
I hope we'll get to something you consider relevant. Did you have anything to add, Mr. Clark?
Well, only that I think whether you stand up in a time of moral crisis is the key test of a senator. And in my judgment, Senator Javits did not stand up. He says he spoke out. I didn't hear him. I spoke in favor of processing impeachment in about 20 states and all over the state of New York from 73 on. I can remember in 73, his saying all this talk of impeachment is dangerous. It's impairing the ability of the government to face problems, and it should be ceased. And instead of speaking out, he's a person that supported Richard Nixon when he ran against John Kennedy in 1960, as he had apologized for the Checker speech in 52 and supported him in 56 and supported him in 68 and was co-chairman in 72 in this state and continued to support him until the day he resigned.
I think we'll probably have some other controversial points later. This one should be, I suppose. I believe you're right, Mrs. Keating. People are interested in what one of you is going to be able to do to help them in their terrible burden of the moment. What would you do as a United States Senator about the problem of inflation?
Well, the absolute cause of inflation, the major cause of inflation, is the excess spending on the part of the Congress.
Does that include the military budget?
It includes all areas of the budget. Anything that's got us running over $305 billion with deficit spending and a heavy interest payment on this has been created by individuals in the Congress who have been quite liberal in their spending policies. Now, Mr. Javits is very proud of his spending record in the Congress, and he can list the many, many programs which he has been instrumental in pushing through the Congress. Mr. Clark, on the other hand, promises that he will do even more, and I think that's a tough record to follow.
Which ones would you cut?
I think that there is no section of the federal government which can't take some form of scrutiny and cutting. All of us know that any budget that is submitted to any agency has a certain amount of fat on it. As a matter of fact, budgets are submitted with that in mind, that some areas of it will be cut before it's passed. I believe with 1,315 federal assistance programs in effect, that these are not getting down to the needy people in this country, that we have created a mammoth bureaucracy. And Mr. Javits is proposing now that we hire many more people on the federal government, that we propose a plan of hiring to lessen unemployment at this time. Who's going to pay for this?
What's going to happen to the unemployed?
I'm speaking for the taxpayer. We're going to have more and more unemployed if we continue this spiral and this climb. We have got to get the federal government to balance its budget. I, as a housewife, have had to balance mine. The working man here in New York has found it increasingly difficult to keep his family together, to provide the kind of education he wants, the kind of diet he wants, the kind of clothing he wants. And he's sick and tired of all of this money being dumped into programs which create further bureaucracies. And a perfect example is the Consumer Protection Agency. Sure, it's a fine thing, but not only does it entangle itself in our lives, but we just plain can't afford it. We've got to get people into the Congress who will have the backbone and stamina to stand up and say no to a policy that is coming through the Senate floor and take the results of that. Instead of going back to the state of New York and saying, I'm giving you this, this, and this for free, vote for me. Nothing is free. The taxpayer's paying.
Thank you,
I'm
Mrs.
speaking
Chief.
For the taxpayer.
Mr. Clark, what would you do about inflation?
I have extensive position papers on every issue. I think I'm the only candidate in this race that does. They were carefully prepared over a long period of time. There are 12 points in our inflation paper, and let me mention several. I believe in price and wage control. I think we need statutory authority now. I think we've needed to have it on the books for a long
time. Statutory or actual?
Statutory authority to use. You've got to have your statute to apply, but I favor applying it now. I favor including within that the power to roll prices back and the power to tax excess profits. I think of people that will sit around and watch the exploitation of the so-called energy crisis last winter that the oil companies engaged in, their profits skyrocketing while our prices skyrocketed. They've lost their political will. We should have faced up immediately. And some people haven't spoken out yet as to whether they favor price and wage control or serve in the U.S. Senate. Senator Mansfield has, and Speaker Albert has, and we need that. We've needed it for a long time. I don't like it anymore than I like taking bad taste in medicine, but considering the alternative right now, I think we have to do it. You're going to have to cut the federal budget. 65% of the discretionary federal budget is in the defense area. It's just disingenuous to ever talk about any significant cut in the federal budget, although we need to tighten up and be efficient all through government. While I was Assistant Attorney General for 4 years, I twice reduced my total budget by 10% and cut back manpower 10%, reducing caseload from 33,000 cases to 12,000 in 4 years.
How much do you think the military budget can be cut?
I think it can be cut by $25 billion. I have specified.
That sounds like a tremendously high figure.
It is a big amount. It leaves $60 billion. That's more than any country in Western Europe is spending in proportion to its total gross product, and we can be a stronger America with that. We will be a safer world with that, and we can preserve our economy with that.
You seem disinterested in how much the Russians spend.
Well, I'm not at all disinterested in how much the Russians spend, but I think I know where deterrent capacity comes from. We have the power to destroy all the people on Earth many times over now, and I just don't think you need to add very much to that to deter that sort of thing. I think we can protect ourselves and defend freedom without spending $90 billion or $85 billion or $80 billion. Senator Javits voted against Proxmire's bill. There were 34 votes for it last year that would have put a $74 billion ceiling on it. Went up billions and billions above that. $25 billion would be $11 billion from NATO. Senator Javits has voted against NATO cuts. We're spending $22 billion in Europe on that. I think we ought to let Western Europe pick up half the tab. This isn't the Western Europe of the late 40s. This is an economically powerful Western Europe. If they want an American military presence there, let them pay for it. $11 billion right there. We've got more than $6 billion in R&D and other areas. We need to make those cuts.
Thank you, sir. Senator Javits?
The tissue of illusion which seems to prevail here is really amazing. In the first place, New York City has 7% unemployment now. The state has almost as much. It has pockets of unemployment like Buffalo, where it's 12%. Just as you said a minute ago, what are you going to do about the unemployed? Well, I have done something about it. I've brought about the extension of federal unemployment compensation to New York, and that's at no cost to the federal government. That comes out of the unemployment insurance reserves, and 300,000 New Yorkers are now drawing that extended compensation for 13 weeks after using up their 26 weeks. And I'm the leading advocate, I would like to tell Mrs. Keating, completely confirming what she says, of public service jobs for at least 500,000 Americans as the way in which to take up the slack instead of putting them on welfare, which the U.S. is going to pay anyhow in the main. And that would result in doubling the number of such jobs New York has. It has about 30,000 now. It should have 60. Now, as to the positive side of the coin, the summit told us, with the best people in the world, that the budget cutting the budget, would not end inflation, that it was a good faith effort by the federal government that would encourage other efforts. I'm on the budget committee because of the seniority New York has given me, and I've pledged myself to cut it to $300 billion, which is pretty much the accepted norm figure. But I'm going to be a watchdog to see that in the process of cutting it, we don't cut ourselves out of medical research and education, etc.
What would you do about inflation?
I'm coming, if I may, I'm sorry to, you know, that these things take longer than one plans. The first thing that I think we've got to do is to give the monitoring board on wages and prices more power. I voted for standby wage and price controls back in April, but we failed badly. What we can get, and I'm still for the standby controls and would vote for them again, though I don't think they can be used now. But what we can get is the power in the monitoring board to order a 60-day stay in any major wage or price increase, and to give the monitoring board the subpoena power so that major wage or price increases can be held up to the public view. Second, we need a mandatorily enforced conservation program on oil, gas, and energy. There's no substitute for that. The Arabs will break us, and they'll break the world, and then they'll break themselves.
Rationing?
We may need it. And I stand by rationing control.
Not application at this time.
You cannot, because it isn't yet needed. I think we can get the 15% cut with allocations techniques, just as we used in ending the gas lines. Next, which hasn't been mentioned here, we need an export control program on food, which has a big impact on food prices. We need a food budget. I've got a bill in for that, so has Humphrey, so have others. You need a food budget to say what we'll keep, what we'll export commercially, because we have to export something commercially, or we won't get the foreign exchange to buy anything, and what we'll devote to catastrophe. And finally, we need to boost up the productivity of this country. I know something about business. That's why I think I'm a United States Senator for New York. And I know that you've got to find some way of boosting our productivity, something in the area of 10%. That's the surest way to break inflation. Indeed, one of the big problems we have, the worst figure is not even 12% inflation in prices. The worst figure is about an 8.8% loss in productivity in this country. So as they say in baseball, we're in the cellar on productivity among the leading nations of the world.
Thank you, Senator. Does anybody feel an absolute need to...
Yes, I remark on wage and price controls, since I'm the only one here who is opposed to wage and price controls. They have not worked in the past, and they have, in effect, caused shortages. I was curious about Mr. Javits's remark on the number of jobs he was going to provide, and I wondered who was going to pay for those salaries. Are you asking another man who lives in New York, who's working from one end of the day to the other and barely making ends meet, to provide these monies, to provide the salaries for more jobs? And finally, with remarks to Mr. Clark, who mentioned cutting the defense budget, there's no doubt there's parts of the defense budget that can be cut. I think, as I stated, every budget can be. However, the excessive amount that you propose cutting, defense is not cheap. And as a matter of fact, we spend 6% of our gross national product on defense. The Soviet Union, on the other hand, spends 33% of her gross national product on defense. And since detente began, she has tripled her efforts and tripled her amount of ships on the seas. She's tripled the number of ships. I think we have to provide security for the United States. And I wonder, I really wonder, how you have proposed that we're going to help our allies around the world, including Israel, if you're going to cut the defense budget by that much.
I think that's another way of objection at this moment. Otherwise, we're never going to get any other questions in.
Let me say a word about Senator Javits' statement on unemployment. He said he's a chief proponent of 500,000 jobs. He says, though, when you hear the whole story, we didn't deny it, that it's when unemployment reaches 6%. Well, that's just tinkering with the lives of people. It was 5% when that legislation first came forward. That's a 1% rise in unemployment before this is triggered so that you create these jobs. That's a million jobs. I favor a federal employment program now. I have for a long time. I think it's essential to give young people off the streets jobs, to give part-time jobs to people on Social Security so they can supplement it. I think if we'll face up and do that, we can get America going again in the productivity area and in the opportunity area for people who've been left out too long.
Can I answer that at all of them in 1 minute? Because they're very important. Unemployment, national unemployment is now at 5.8%. Very close to the 6% mark, and this program is a program that now has the backing of the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, the Secretary of the Treasury, and the Secretary of Labor. If Mr. Clark was senator, he'd run it down the drain because he doesn't want to agree to 6% as a trigger. He wants the trigger at 5.8%, and it's sure to go to 6% very, very shortly, unfortunately for all of us.
If I may,
Mr. Clark, I didn't interrupt you. Now as to the $25 billion cut in defense, again, a real deception to the American people, because it costs in salaries $48 billion to maintain the Army, Navy, and Air Force. It's now voluntary. It's no longer a draft army. And if you add 25 to that, that's 73. We've appropriated only 82. We've already cut the budget $5 billion. That leaves $9 billion for everything relating to foreign defense, Israel, NATO, hardware, and everything else. I am convinced that if you went that route, and incidentally, McGovern tried that in the Senate and got very few votes. If you went that route, you'd cut the heart and bone out of American defense, and you'd cause the Soviet Union to lean so hard on Europe that Europe could easily go over to that side.
Well, I think that's real scare talk. The senator must...
Listen, gentlemen, our time is running so short. I'd really like to get into something that other people are talking about, which you haven't talked about. I don't think anybody has talked about this at all. It's a personal question. I dislike asking it, but in these days, I think it has to be asked. I'd like to ask each of the three of you what your net worth is. Senator?
My net worth, I would estimate personally, at under $100,000, and I owe some money for our apartment, which we bought here recently, and a trust of which I am the life beneficiary at present prices, and the beneficiaries thereafter are my wife and children, is probably worth around $600,000. And all of that's been published in the New York Times as recently as 3 or 4 months ago in far more detail than I'm giving it to you.
Mrs. Keating.
Do you own a home, Mr. Javits?
I own my wife and I have an apartment in New York and one in Washington. Both of them are co-ops.
I'm sorry, I was just curious.
I was wondering if this was becoming a social occasion.
No.
Quickly, please.
I own my own home, which I bought for $35,000 in Larchmont. I live on Social Security and VA benefits. I have a very small amount in the bank, and I own a car, and that's it. I don't even know you could tally it up.
Mr. Clark, I understand your ties cost you very little.
Well, I don't pay much for my ties. I didn't save all that from the cost. We have an apartment here in New York that we paid about $70,000. It's not totally paid for yet. We don't own a car. And when I give you this, it's for my entire family. In other words, I don't sever my wife out and not identify what she owns. But my wife and I and our two children, including our home, have a net worth of something just under $200,000.
It's been said that this is becoming increasingly important in how people are going to make up their minds. An awful lot has been known before and heard about Governor Rockefeller. If you are the next United States Senator from New York, I guess we start with you, Mrs. Keating. Will you vote for endorsement of him as Vice President?
No, I believe the only candidate in this race stated quite openly that I would oppose the confirmation of Governor Rockefeller because I feel he has not, in his past record, shown fiscal responsibility, and I feel that this is very badly needed in both the executive branch and in the Congress at this time.
Had nothing to do with anything except his political view.
Well, I would like to quote, if I may, Senator Barry Goldwater mentioned yesterday, and I concur wholeheartedly, one brief sentence, and I quote him. The whole subject is not whether whether Nelson Rockefeller has millions of dollars. It's whether or not he has used those millions of dollars to buy power. And I think this is a question that's raised in all of our minds. It's not that he's a wealthy man, but what he has been able to do with his wealth is a concern to all of us.
Mr. Clark, have you made up your mind?
No, of course not, because I believe in constitutional government, and the Constitution provides that the President shall appoint, combined with the advice and consent of the Senate and the House, confirm the their confirmation of a Vice President. Now, I opposed the nomination of Nelson Rockefeller. I think it was a very poor choice, but it was the President's choice. And now the question for every senator and every representative who believes in truth and constitutional government is to judge the facts, not prejudge the facts, but judge the facts. Now, when you look at the facts that have come in to this time, and I don't think Mr. Rockefeller had an adequate chance to fully testify on all the subjects, and he should have such a chance, but when you look at the facts that are on the table now, I think it's very doubtful that he should be confirmed.
You lean towards non-confirmation.
I commended Nelson Rockefeller to the committee which heard him as his senator from New York. I backed him twice for President of the United States. I think on the whole, he was one of the best of all the 50 governors of the 50 states. Serious questions have been raised in respect of certain gifts he made to Dr. Ronan, a book which was written, with which he apparently had something to do, regarding Arthur Goldberg, a very distinguished American, other matters of other gifts. I feel that he must testify. The burden of proof is on him to show that he's still the Nelson Rockefeller that caused him to be appointed Vice President or nominated for Vice President. If he stands up on the hearings before the Rules Committee, I'll vote for him. If he doesn't stand up in the hearings before the Rules Committee, I'll vote against him. I'm just as free to do either.
How do you lean?
My position. I'll lean when I see the evidence based of his answers to the charges and the perfectly proper hearing which he will get.
I wish we had more time to get into more areas. There are many of substance, and I apologize for not covering those. I do think, however, that we did get into some things of consequence. I thank you all for being